we are not just meat. And we all kind of know that. We have dimensions that rocks don't have. Rocks kind of stand still all by themselves unless they're being moved by a glacier or by an earthquake. We don't just take up physical space. We know that we are different from the rocks. We have other dimensions. Well, we have life, but so do a lot of other plants and animals. They have life, they have mobility, they have instincts, they have urges, they have needs, and God knows we have all of those instincts and urges and needs. And yet we like to think of ourselves, and as far as we know, we are different from the other animals on this planet. We have a dimension to us of mind, a sense of consciousness of self, something that science does not fully understand at this point, but we sit here and we have a sense of ourselves and a continuity of our own personal as well as social, familial, and tribal histories. There's a lot going on when you're a human being. In fact, we have known this from really the beginning. In the beginning of Hebrew Scriptures, in Genesis, there are three words that are used to build up what it is to be a human being. Ruach, Nefesh, and Neshuma. And I'm not going to go into all of the distinctions, but in building them up, it is breath, it is life, it is what most people call, but we don't really have to define, as soul. The sense that there is something in us beside just the fact that we are alive, and that is more than the sum of all of our actions. This independent part of us that seems to stand outside and look at the surface and look inside at ourselves. The self-reflecting part that we'll call soul or mind or some other word. But what's clear is that it seeks others. It doesn't simply dwell alone and apart from relationships with other bodies, with other minds, with other people. That we are, as many other forms of life are, we are deeply social and have a need for each other and a need to be together in a lot of ways. One of the great arguments, discussions, debates that has gone on really since the beginning of time, and even that story in Genesis, is this debate between our spiritual nature and our physical and material nature. And most traditions have tried to make this a fight with a winner. That there are some who say, look, we are simply machines. Animals. We need food. We need fuel. That is the metaphor to understand us. There is no hierarchy. We are just the same as everything else. And some of the people in PETA take that viewpoint also, that a human being or a lab rat have basically the same right to existence. That would not be my position. There are people that say, no, we're of a spiritual nature. And the spirit is something higher. The spirit is something eternal. The spirit is something clean. Our bodies get dirty, but our spirits are pure. Our bodies get old, but our souls remain forever young and forever eternal. There's a huge conflict, not simply in Western religion and philosophy, though certainly in Western religion and philosophy, about the higher spiritual and the lower material. And we understand it intuitively because, in fact, we do get dirty. And, in fact, things that are physical do deteriorate. And we do want to believe in something that is deeper and cleaner and purer than these layers of skin that fall off and rub off and are subject to the vicissitudes of life and the terrible fact of death, and we want to believe in something pure and spiritual. It's my position that this is a debate that doesn't need a winner and a loser, but I'll get to that in a moment. The conflict goes back, and you see it in Greek philosophy with the Platonic ideals and the base material existence. You certainly see it in Christianity. It exists in Judaism, where Havdalah, the idea of separation, and a separation to now mix a religious metaphor of the higher chakras from the lower chakras at roughly around the waist, where we see this conflict between material and spiritual. I can imagine a conversation that goes back to our pre-human ancestors, involving maybe even Lucy, because we know that even our pre-human ancestors, though on the same or on a parallel line with us, recognized the fact of death. When somebody died, they knew that they were dead, that the life, the spirit, the breath had gone out of them. But they didn't accept the finality of death. They recognized it at once, and they put their dead in burial pits, but some threw food in. So that kind of bespoken attitude that they might wake up and need some kind of nourishment. And you can imagine back then that there was a conversation between the more material of our ancestors and the more spiritual, where the more material one said, "You're going to throw in a mammoth haunch into a perfectly good mammoth haunch into that cave. Come on, put in a couple of oysters. They're starting to look a little hinky anyway, and so is Uncle Og, and so, you know, they'll be a good match in the afterlife for each other." And Lucy, our great-great-great-grandmother, said, "Listen, you keep talking like this, you eat the oysters, and you can work it out with Uncle Og even this evening once they get to you, because he deserves a mammoth haunch, because he was a great hunter. And he gave his life for all of us when he was trying to take down that very mammoth. So I want you to put it into that pit." Well, I think it's an endless debate. And it is the place where we start, in a way, to see the distinctions amongst religion, spirituality, and magic, and philosophy. Putting the food in the cave is an act of hope. The next, and in the pit is an act of hope. The next step that they took was to paint a picture of Uncle Og on that terrible and fatal mammoth hunt on the wall of their cave, so that then when they went out on their next hunt, they would touch the picture of Og and say, "Bless us, Og, and help us on the hunt." And then they would start praying to Og. At that point, we start having what a lot of people get into in the terms of the conflict between reason and religion. To remember Og and his bravery is inspirational. To venerate Og through interior decorating is deeply human. To pray to Og is an instinct that we have, but that's where it starts moving over from inspiration to veneration. Asking his help on the hunt is a perfectly normal human thing to do, but it is trans-rational, and it enters into a different category that is neither material nor spiritual. It enters into a religious land. When I'm talking about the spiritual, I'm not talking about the religious and the magical. I'm talking about the fact that we human beings have physical needs. We need fuel, food. We need what the military used to call three hots and a cot. But that's prison fare. Because as human beings, we need so much more. There's another dimension to us. a dimension that needs salt and pepper and cumin and coriander and curry and garlic and all of those various things that change gruel into something that is transcendent and that nourishes a part of us beyond just the physical need. We have a need for a cave, but we have much more than a need for a cave. A bear looks for a cave in which to hibernate. Human beings look for a cabin in which to estivate and look it up and spend the summer. And we have needs that are, how can I put this? Decorative. Decorative. I think the second oldest profession was interior decorator. And has a lot in common. Well, no, don't make me go there. We need to be fed and nourished on a physical level as well as a spiritual level. We need somebody to share the food with. We need to each other not simply for physical survival, because alone Og didn't have a chance of bringing down that mammoth. He needed other people to help and cooperate, as we need other people in order to maintain our lives and maintain our lives in this kind of community. But we need people for more than that. At the great and terrible times in our lives, we seek each other out to share meals, to share laughter, to share tears. There is no time when human beings need to be with each other more than in those great occasions. A beautiful sunset is beautiful and inspirational and transcendent, but it's not the same in just a picture that is shared later. It is greater when you have someone with whom to share it. When we celebrated the great occasion of the moon landing so many years ago, people gathered together in homes, not because we didn't have our own television sets, but because when something wonderful was happening, we wanted to be together, to share the anxiety and to share the relief and the joy, to let out that sigh together. When terrible things happen, whether it's an assassination of a great hero, whether it's the flood of Katrina, whether it is 9/11, our churches, our temples, our places of secular religion are filled with people who are drawn together, because together it is far more nourishing and enriching when experiences are shared. We calculate the heavens, we look at the winter, we see the sun setting, and we come together to celebrate the rebirth of the sun in the winter. We do it in a Jewish context of Hanukkah, about which I will talk in a couple of weeks. We do it in the Christian context of Christmas. If I have any Zoroastrians here, we do it for Mithra on the same date. We have this need to be together. This weekend, where we have just celebrated Thanksgiving, why do we come together to eat turkey and stuffing and relish? And my wife's plate was piled so high, she said, something's missing. So how can anything be missing? I can't see the color of the plate. She said, I forgot the turkey. We celebrate Super Bowls and Thanksgivings together, because we have a physical need, body to body, of contact, for protection, for affirmation, for love. We also have a need beyond our physical needs and urges, rational and irrational, for souls, for soulmates, for people with common interests and passions, even if the interest and passion is arguing with each other, but to make contact with each other, because it enhances who we are. We need the physical distinctions of different genes, because we become stronger through those genes combining and recombining in a wider and deeper pool. And we have the same kind of spiritual need for a larger, if you will, social and cultural gene pool where we learn from one another. We need each other and we need to come together not because we are the same, but because we are not the same. Because we have ideas to challenge each other with. We have passions to confirm and to test so that bodies and souls and minds and spirit and the material all come together in very many ways in community. But what ties every church and temple and mosque and ashram and Sierra Club and every kind of secular organization is the idea that spiritually and materially both. We do not have to choose. We are both. For years, physicists, and whenever I get into physics, I get into trouble because I actually don't know anything. Physicists argued about whether light was a wave or a particle. There were times when it was just incontrovertible that it was a particle. And there were other experiments that made it clear that it could only be a wave. Well, turns out it can be a wavicle. I know it's a made up word, but when we are thinking of our spiritual nature and our physical nature, I suggest that we are a wavicle. That we have components of the physical and we have components of the spiritual, and that they are not hard and fast distinctions. Because without either part, we are not ourselves. We are something else. And we are more than ourselves when we are together. Because we come together, as Ian knows, in order to share the laughter and to bear the pain, to give us the strength and the courage to go around and around again.